Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Starting and operating a small business against all odds, living largely by your wits, you demonstrate more courage and devotion to a dream than any other non-military American in this century.
We are back. It's 13 after. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and you're listening to the show that is dedicated to providing small business owners and small business dreamers with the maximum opportunity to be successful. And one of the ways we do that is by inviting really smart people to join me on the show. Experts, people who know exactly what they're talking about, everything that there is to know about their area of expertise. And one of those individuals is my very good friend, and yours as well, Mary Westheimer, the president of BookZone. Mary's worked in every facet of book publishing, from acquisition, editorial, and marketing to bookstore management and sales. She's a founding member of the Arizona Book Publishing Association. She's a member of our Brain Trust, and she is well represented in our archives. I wouldn't have it any other way. Mary, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you so much, Jim. It's wonderful to be here.
Marvelous Mary is what I call her, folks, because she is marvelous, and she cares about you, and she cares about me, and that's what I like about her. Mary, you guys conducted a survey. Actually, it's a one-of-a-kind survey, isn't it?
Well, it really is. We don't know how many other industries specifically have been surveyed about their activity on the web, but we thought it was important to find out more about those people we help, which is publishers. So we said, okay, we'll do it ourselves. And we conducted a survey of nearly 9,000 U.S. publishers.
You know, a lot of people would be surprised if there were that many publishers. But that's what you guys do for a living. You guys, you guys support publishers, primarily independent publishers, right?
Primarily. There are an amazing number of publishers, because when it comes to business, publishing is actually a business that has a very low threshold. In other words, almost anybody can get into publishing for a small amount of money. If you want to do it well, you're probably looking at an initial investment of, say, $10,000 to $25,000. Now, there are people who do it on a lot less than that, but it makes it very hard if you don't have your marketing budget or if you don't have the money to put together a book properly. So that's a relatively low threshold in the world of business. But there are people who do it for $500 too. So,
by a desktop software publishing software package or something.
Right, they do, and the only thing that's bad about that, and this is a good place to say it because we're talking to people who are interested in small business, is sometimes they don't invest in learning about the business, and nobody paid me to say this, but I will say one of the best $80 that anybody will ever spend if they're interested in publishing is to join an organization called the Publishers Marketing Association.
PMA.
PMA is a great group. It's $80 to join, and it's 3,400 publishers who are helping each other.
And Mary is one of the pillars of that organization. I know that.
Well, I
because everywhere I go, when I hear PMA, if I mention Mary Westheimer, they all know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, they shake their heads.
No, they don't. No, they don't. They say, you know her? Congratulations.
It's a great group, though, and I think that too many people have unfortunately discovered it after they've started publishing.
Yeah.
They give all kinds of ways to help you market, but most important is they give you access to 3,400 people who actually want to help you.
Yeah, I know several other people who are part of PMA, and they all are like what you just said. I mean, they're like Mary. They're like Shel Horowitz and others who are very active in PMA. But let's talk about, let's get back to the survey.
Yes.
You guys polled almost 9,000 publishers.
Right.
You got back a 6.4% response, which is dynamite.
Yeah, it is good.
I mean, most direct mail, if you get back 1%, that's kind of a decent return, isn't it?
That's my understanding. I've heard from other direct marketing people that actually, if you have a good lift, you can expect 2 or 3%.
And you're hoping for 4. And you guys got over 6.
Right, and one of the reasons we did was, of course, we didn't charge anything. And second of all, people are intensely interested in how other people are doing. Publishing can be a fairly lonely business, so it's important that people share ideas. Mm-hmm. But I think that one of the reasons we got a big response, Jim, is the number of publishers who have websites.
Yeah.
I recently read a survey that said that by the year 2000, 56% of businesses will have websites. Well, here's an amazing number. Nearly 79%, that's more than three-quarters of all publishers have websites.
Already.
Mm-hmm. And this part is, I find also fascinating. More than a third of those have had a site for more than 3 years.
Hmm. Well, and that makes them grandfathers. I said earlier in the week, I made the comment on the show that a four-year-old website is an antique.
And
obviously, most of these four-year-old sites have been changed several times since then, but that to have an address, a URL, a domain for 4 years, that makes you one of the pioneers almost, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely, because the web only actually started in 1993.
Yeah.
So it is quite amazing. But it makes a lot of sense, because publishers are creating a product with words on some medium, whether it's paper, ink on paper, or words on a cassette, or on a CD.
Right.
So the web is basically publishing, and they also are creating a product that is definable. So that means that if you buy a book off the internet or from your corner bookstore, you're getting the same book. So publishers understood the web because it's basically their business, and they're also selling a perfect product to be sold online.
Tell us the title of what was the title and the initial sort of thesis of this survey? What did you tell them at first?
Well, the point was to find out what they were doing online and find out what they thought about what they were doing online. And then we also got a sneak peek at what they want to do in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea was to get a great perspective, which I feel we did, on what people in the publishing industry are doing with the internet.
Mary, we're going to take a break. Folks, it's 20 after, and when we come back, Mary and I are going to talk some more about the results of this survey. We're going to get into the purpose of the sites of these publishers and the results that they found. We're going to talk about marketing. How happy they were with it. We're going to talk about sizes of their site and on. Lots of good stuff. And every one of these points, we will convert from what it means to a publisher to what it means to you who may not be in the publishing business. Time that I'm visiting with Mary Westheimer, I'm a happy camper. Mary is a great lady and a good friend. She really does care about the folks that she serves, and she cares an awful lot about you and me, because otherwise she wouldn't get up as early as she is. It is somewhere between, it's actually 24 after 5 o'clock in the morning where she is out in beautiful Arizona. Right, Mary?
Don't remind me, Jim.
She's hardcore dedicated, and I appreciate it. Mary, we're talking about the survey that you guys conducted at BookZone. Did BookZone conduct it or did PMA conduct it?
No, BookZone did this.
BookZone.com.
Totally a BookZone.
Conducted it, and this is a survey of publishers and to find out what they had going on the web, what they liked, what they didn't like, what was working, what wasn't working, how they were doing things, how big it was, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and that's what we're talking about. And a lot of this information, I mean, I've got an executive summary of this survey, and there's so much here for all of us. Mary, talk to us about the site purpose and the results.
Well, that was one of the surprises. There were some real surprises in here, Jim. One of them was that we felt the respondents in the survey had a pretty good grasp of what the web is best for right now. We had expected, I guess is a fair word, that most people would say sales, 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 sales.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly enough, they didn't. A slight majority, 76.5%, said they use their site for promotion.
Now, you gave them, they were allowed to make multiple choices, right?
Right, right. Yeah. And 73%, slightly more than that, said they're using it for sales. And that is not unexpected, and they are making sales. But at this point in the lifespan of the web, promotion is one of its strongest purposes. So we thought that was pretty healthy that people realized that and intended for that to be a strong purpose, in fact, the strongest. Third of all was international exposure.
Can we stop before you get into international? I want to stop for a second and talk about that promotional issue.
Absolutely.
I think your point is an excellent one. You said that what you liked about that number, that 76% using it for promotional, was that they knew that that's why they were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't an accident. Because
right.
As you and I know, there are small business people out there who want to have an e-commerce site, which translates to sales.
And
they
I
want to have an e-commerce site, but they haven't got the site that will do that for them.
Right, right. And e-commerce, it's not as if they're mutually exclusive.
Right.
They
yes.
can both be done at once, but quite often what I find is that people, they want to sell so much, and that is their ultimate goal. They don't understand that they must first promote, because people don't know who they are,
right.
and they don't know why they would buy it. And this is especially true with small business, because mm-hmm. if I come to a site where somebody is selling widgets, and it's a small company, I don't know who they are, and I need first to trust them. So first, I want to read a little bit about widgets and mm-hmm. Find out from their perspective what they know about widgets.
Exactly.
And then as I realize, oh, these people, they really know widgets,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to be more likely to say, if I'm in need to buy widgets, I think I'll buy from them. Now, wait a minute, who are they?
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, in a secondary place, do I want to know who these people are?
And then there's the whole technological structure of actually doing business with them. Is that even set up? But before we get that far, Mary, one of the things that helped me, and we talked about this earlier in the week with Paul and Tim Berry, when we were talking about how to develop and manage and grow an e-commerce site, I made this comment. This was my definition now, having talked to a lot of folks like Mary Westheimer and Tim Berry and Paul Berry and Bob Sullivan and Wally Bach and a lot of other guys. There are three kinds of sites. One is an informational site, which is nothing more than a brochure on the web. Then there's a transactional site, and I think Wally Bach was the one that gave me that definition. A transactional site is one where you can communicate back and forth, you can share information back and forth, but not really do business. And three is the e-commerce site, and that's where you can lay your money down. Now, what do you think about those three?
I think those are very valid ways to define sites, and Wally is certainly one of the smartest people I know. We have, since the very beginning, when we launched in 1994, offered publishers the ability to do e-commerce. The four-color brochure, as they're often called, mm-hmm. sites that are really just informational,
mm-hmm.
They were the early sites, and you still see them occasionally, but people want instant gratification.
Yep.
So I think if you give them all the options, they'll pick the one they want.
Absolutely. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this, because I wanted to get you to identify, when you say promotion, and the difference between promotion and sales, and also we're going to move over into the international exposure, because I know we have a lot of folks listening who want to know how they did business internationally. And we're going to move on to talk about marketing. We're going to talk about how satisfied they were with their site, a lot of other good stuff. 29 after, I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back with Mary Westheimer. We are back. It's 33 after. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com, and that's where you can go to hear at least two archives with marvelous Mary Westheimer, the president of BookZone.com, which is BookZone. It's actually called BookZone, but their website is BookZone.com, and there are two outstanding archives there where Mary visited with us, and one of them was about e-zines, and the other one was about just the internet and technology in general. Mary, those were great visits.
Yeah, absolutely. I always have a great time.
Thanks. Okay, Mary, we were talking about my definition, and those three, by the way, folks, those three that I gave you of different kinds of websites, informational, transactional, and archives, e-commerce, those are kind of my breakdown. The transactional and the e-commerce are others, but I added the informational one. I think, Mary, I just want to repeat one thing that you said earlier, because I think this is important. If whichever one of those you are, it doesn't matter. It's not wrong to be one and not be the other. The point is, and Mary, you made this point so well, is that make sure that what your website is what you intend it to be.
Right, and I think every website should start with audience and purpose. What do you want to achieve, and who do you want to do that thing so you can achieve your purpose?
Right. All right, now I'm going to let you get into the international segment.
Okay, sure.
It
was interesting, though. We know from what our publishers tell us, our customers online, that about a third of their sales come from overseas. So, interestingly enough, 31% of the people in the survey said that was one of their purposes, was to get overseas traffic and sales, and they are, or promotion.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that really made a lot of sense. I also think it's fascinating how they're doing this, Jim. The marketing side of things, and there were some interesting results in that section.
Mm-hmm.
Are we ready to talk
yes,
about
let's go,
that?
Let's go there.
Okay, great.
Wait, before you do, how do you define promotion?
Okay.
How do you think they define promotion?
Promotion, in my mind, and I think in most people's minds, is giving people enough information about the books to whet their appetite, to make their products or services irresistible to others. On the web, it's a lot like direct mail.
Mm-hmm.
That means giving them a lot of information.
Would it also be building brand awareness?
Sure. Oh, sure.
Isn't that a really important thing? That's something that I really like to try to talk about as much as I can, is to remind people, regardless of whether you own a convenience store or a little convenience store or a Dairy Queen or a 100 employee company or whatever, you've got a brand that you need to be promoting.
Right. And we used to call that name recognition.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very, very important, although I heard a fascinating point made about it, which is if you're building your brand, make sure there's something to support that brand,
mm-hmm.
that there's something really good behind it,
right.
Because that will build your long-term recognition longer than anything.
Because if there's not, all you have is a name, no brand.
Right.
as they say in Texas, all hat and no cattle. Okay, now let's get into the marketing results.
Yeah, what we found was that, not surprisingly, more than a third of the publishers, 76.7%, are using search engines and directories.
Mm-hmm.
And about 40% are using linking campaigns. I think linking campaigns are very smart because what they do is they build recurring traffic, like the search engines used to do, but they really don't do anymore.
All right, now I'll define linking campaign.
A linking campaign is a campaign in which you go out to other sites where your audience goes. For instance, for you, Jim, it'd be other sites where people who are interested in small business
mm-hmm.
go,
mm-hmm.
and let them know you're there, whether it's saying, put a link to us from your links page and we'll give you one, or whether it's saying, here's an article. Put this article up on your site, and
yep.
this is often called content linking.
Mm-hmm.
Put this article up on your site, and then at the bottom there's a link to your site. So it's a way of spreading the word using other people's sites
mm-hmm.
to bring them to yours.
And it could be your chamber of commerce. It
right.
could be a vendor. It could be, as Mary said, it could be someone who is maybe a competitor in another state.
Right. Yeah, the key is my audience going there? Are they going to be able to find me on that other site?
Yeah.
And I think it's a wonderful way to do it. But surprisingly, when it came to results, that wasn't one of those things that people
mm-hmm.
found worked best.
And what did work best for them?
And neither were search engines, interestingly
yeah.
enough. The thing that worked best of all, Jim, was promoting to news groups and mail lists.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
were you surprised about that?
We weren't surprised that that was a strong result. I think we were surprised that was the strongest result.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, I thought linking would do better.
I would have too.
Yeah,
that's what I would have said because you can really get lost in the search engine environment, can't you?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, the search engine environment is. I mean, if once you're there, once you're on top, I mean, it's dynamite. But it's there. It's that window of opportunity is really tough to get to open up again, isn't it?
Well, it's not only tough to get there, but as you're saying. It's hard to stay there because
yep.
everybody else is also trying to be at the top.
Right.
It is something that will bring you results. There's no question that staying at this top search engine can help.
I want you to talk about news groups and mail lists when we come back, Mary. Then we're going to move over and talk about site traffic and then site size. That's coming up after this next message, folks. It's 39 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with Mary Westheimer, the president of BookZone, and their website is bookzone.com. Check it out. Welcome back, heroes. It's 44 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Our phone number is 888-822-8255, and my website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Mary Westheimer is our guest and our very good friend. Mary is the president of BookZone. Mary, I'd like for you to give us your website and tell us a little bit about BookZone.
BookZone at BookZone.com is the largest publisher on the Internet. I'm sorry, publisher community on the Internet. We're not publishers, but we represent about 1,100 publishers and publishing organizations. So we have lots of books that publishers are selling, lots of sites, lots of audiobooks, interestingly enough. And then we also have an informational area called BookZone Pro that has an incredible amount of information about publishing, including some of the biggest publishing organizations in the world. And we have one of the best collections of book-related links called Literary Leaps.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say you represent 1,100 publishers, how do you represent them?
Great question. What we help them do, Jim, is set up websites. So we help them sell their books. Either they have a full-blown website or they have a single-title listing, each of which has its own e-commerce. It has a secure interactive order mm-hmm. form. Or we have a wonderful program called Book Flash, which is like an electronic news release. So in some way, we're helping them sell or promote their books online.
All right. And BookZone.com is the website. Check that out, folks. And send Mary an email. If you need any help, she'll be glad to correspond with you.
Absolutely.
Mary, let's talk about, you said earlier that the thing that you found these publishers got the most results from was by using news groups and mail lists.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't know what those two things are.
That's true, which is amazing. Only 16.8% of our respondents were even using them. But they were the happiest of everybody who said they were using promotion online to build their sites. News groups and mail lists are two ways that people have, if you will, online clubs, Tim. And what I mean by that is, if you're interested in a particular subject, let's take woodworking,
mm-hmm.
and you love woodworking, then you might sign up for what's called a mail list. It's very easy. It just works by email. So you would go out to a site called List, LISZT.com.
LISZT.
Like the composer.
Mm-hmm.
And you would search for woodworking, and what you would find would be mail lists where people are exchanging information on woodworking. And so you'd pick one out, or maybe two, and you would send an email to a certain address, and then everybody who subscribed, just like that, would get all the messages sent to that list.
Mm-hmm.
So as you can imagine, everybody on that list is interested in woodworking. News groups are very similar, except they're on a different part of the Internet, the part called the Usenet.
Mm-hmm.
And people go to a place where this so-called club meets. And the biggest difference is you have to go there. And also, the messages are what are called threaded. And all that means is all the messages remain there. In mail lists, they go away. Once you throw them away, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
But on news groups, they have all the messages listed, and they're very easy to find.
So is it... In a mail list, basically, the email is sent to you, and it resides on your computer. If you throw it away, then it's gone.
Right.
And with a news group, it's actually posted basically on a server somewhere. Is that right?
Right. And you can read different people's comments on different subjects.
Yeah.
And it's to find those, you go to a site called Deja.com, Deja.com.
Okay. And that's where you can find out about how those two locations are where you can find out and identify and find people who do the things that you do and who like the things that you do, sell the things that you sell, and buy the things that you sell.
And buy the things that you
sell.
There
is
the key.
We don't want to miss that one, do we?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you for those definitions, and I'm glad to know that. I know that I think you and I are, at least maybe I've talked about those with someone else, but it's been quite a while, maybe a year, since we talked about news groups and mail lists, and I wanted to get that out again. Okay. What was their experience with print advertising and direct mail?
Before we go there, I want to mention one thing about news groups and mail lists. Don't go out there and say, buy my products.
Oh, yeah.
You will upset people.
That's
you will not do yourself any good.
Mm-mm.
Go out and participate, and you can casually mention what you do or have it in your signature, but whatever you do, don't just blurt out, buy my stuff, because it'll upset them.
Well, that upsets everyone on all levels. I mean, I had one person a year and a half ago on my show, and that person has never been back. And I, at the end of the hour, I said, give me a, you know, please give our audience a closing comment. And that person said, buy my book. And that person has never been back on my show again. That's the only time that's ever happened. So I don't like that. No one likes that.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. But that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. Okay, what about, you asked them how they did with print advertising and direct mail.
Oh, boy, was that a disaster. Interestingly enough, offline marketing was not successful. Now, I've seen people say that since, that of course it's not successful because when they see that, they're not online.
Right.
If you're using print advertising.
They can't take action.
That did not turn out well at all.
Yeah.
People who used offline, whether it was print, advertising, or direct mail, were not happy with the results. One of the things that did surprise me about the results of online marketing, though, was that second to news groups and mail lists was online advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Not search engines, not linking campaigns, but actually advertising online.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was very encouraging.
Of course, now, okay, there's the music. We're going to come back, folks, and wrap this up with Mary Westheimer. We're talking about a survey that they did of publishers and what they found out about their usage of the Internet. And a lot of this applies to us. Most of it applies to us. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 54 after the hour. I'm glad you're here. I'm Jim Wassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our great friend Mary Westheimer, the president of BookZone. BookZone.com is their website. They support publishers, 1,100 publishers, and lots more to come. They have an outstanding website, BookZone.com, as I said. Mary, I want to thank you again for sharing the hour with us. We're wrapping up the hour talking about the information that you found in the survey. What would be some of the last things that you want to make sure that we got across from the survey as we finish up?
I think clarity of purpose and understanding of your audience, understanding you have to market and focusing in on those news groups and mail lists.
Mm-hmm.
We found that certain people knew their websites intimately. If this is a big part of your marketing, and it really can be, know the ins and outs, get reports, analyze them, figure out where people are going and where they're not going, and figure out how to boost that to achieve your purpose.
That focus is so important, isn't it? Because, I mean, a lot of people get a website and they just sort of think that they almost act like, well, you know, I've rented a building and I've unlocked the door and I've got the door open, so where are the customers?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they haven't thought about, you know, does anybody need what they have to sell? They haven't thought about can they even buy what I have to sell once they get to my website?
And even more important, I find this a real issue, can they understand what it is I do, or what can they find what they want when they come to my site?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a lot of people, when they put up a website, it's not clear. You go to it and you look and you say, well, I wonder what this is about.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a very small screen. You usually have a 14-inch screen,
right,
to communicate something, and you've got to do it very clearly.
Let's talk about the costs. I know one of the things you found out in the survey was what these people spent for their websites. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting. Also, the fact that many of them were building their websites themselves, a surprising number. Slightly more than half, 55%, paid less than $1,000 for their site.
And would that have been the ones that they designed, or would that have been...
Well, there's a combination. About a little more than a third paid less than $500. Now, most of those people did do their sites themselves. About just a little less than half, 47%, had their site built entirely by inside staff.
Hmm.
And then only 26% used both inside and out, and about 25 also hired outside. So there was a real broad range of who did what.
What was an example of the most expensive site that you saw? I mean the number, not the address.
That would be BookZone. No, or maybe your beautiful new site. You have a gorgeous new site.
Yeah, but I don't think it would top the list, though, as far as cost. Thank you, Mary, for that.
The way we did this was in ranges. So what we said, that we had a grouping of more than $10,000. Actually, only 21% of the respondents paid more than $5,000. Yeah.
Do you consider that to be a lot to pay for a website?
Well, remember that a lot of these people, if they're a large publisher, they have hundreds and hundreds of titles.
Yeah.
They have a big database on their site, mm-hmm, that's running that site. So
right,
we have many sites that are over $5,000, and we have many sites that are under. But the big ones with the databases,
yeah,
they're certainly in that range.
Yeah. Mary, thank you very much. We've got to wrap it up for the hour. This is good information. Thank you for helping us translate this survey into information that small business owners can use. As always, you were great, and we're looking forward to next time.
Likewise. Thank you so
much.
See
you, Mary. Bye-bye. Mary Westheimer, ladies and gentlemen, with BookZone. Got to wrap it up for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.